Okay, 7 o'clock. We're kind of a thin crowd tonight, but as you're here, the cold, it's going to get warmer, so they say. So. Excuse me. Justin getting the papers passed out for tonight's lesson. While we're doing that, we'll go through a little review like we do each time. We've got chapters 40, 41, and 42 tonight. Story of Joseph. But we'll back up to 37, we first introduced to Joseph, and do our review start here. So, we first meet Joseph, he's 17 years old. He was born, we know about that back. He was 6 years old when he came out of the East and came back to Canaan. But now he's 17 years old, and he goes out with his brothers to look after the sheep. All right, here we go. I got a bottle of water up here. I'm trying bad to get a sore throat, so. He goes out to tend his sheep with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, the two handmaids, and he takes a bad report about them back to his father. Now, when those things build up, as you know, bad reports gonna make them feel bad about him, okay? And then he has the coat of many colors, and so that brings on envy and jealousy and all this kind of stuff. That just adds to it there. And then, he talks to these dreams to him he's got about the sheaves and all their sheaves bind down to his, and all this jealousy and envy turns into hatred, and they hate him now. And then the next dream he has is the brothers bowing down with the sun and moon, which would be his father and mother bowing down to him as well. This one, Jacob rebukes him, but the brothers now feel even harder against him. So all this is building up here. It comes into the climax then when he sends them out to check them to find the brothers that's tending the flocks. We got a map here. They're down in Hebron down here. Shechem's up in the middle of the country. They're not there in Shechem. And he goes up to Dothan, the bottom of the Jezreel Valley up there at the end of it, to find the brothers. So when they see him coming, they say, here comes this dreamer. Here comes the dreamer. And Reuben has a plan to get him and put him in his cistern, his pit, so that he can get him out later and carry him back to his father. But apparently including the story here, Reuben's away. When the other brothers there are with him and they see this band of Ishmaelite traders. And they're coming, if you can imagine the map, they're coming up the top part up here back to the east, going down through Canaan, going down to Egypt down here. So they come through Canaan all the way down through there. And they say, if we don't kill him, then his blood's not on our hands. Plus we get some money for him. So they get this nice plan to sell him for this 22nd shekel of silver. So the Ishmaelite traders take him off to Egypt. Reuben comes back now. We'll get him out of the pit, the cistern, and carry him back to his father. He is furious because of what they've done to him. They take his coat, this coat of many colors that has stripped off of him, and put a goat's blood on it. But they don't have the DNA testing those days, so it was animal or Joseph or what. Carry it back to his father in this nice, deceitful way, say, is this your son's coat? Obviously, deceit, lying to him about that. So, Jacob then knows that the animal's got a hold of him and killed him as he's going traveling up through the country there. So he just mourns for him and refuses to be comforted because he's the son, the first son of his favorite wife, Rachel. Meantime, Joseph sold to Potiphar, who is the captain of the guard for Pharaoh there, down in Egypt. Now, think about this 17-year-old down in Egypt, never see his family again, far as he knows, all this stuff this time. So a couple of things we looked at lesson-wise is the favoritism that was shown by Jacob to Joseph. Coat of many colors, going back a generation. Remember his parents, Isaac and Rebekah, had the favorite son, Esau and Jacob. You see that favoritism coming from there also. Talk about jealousy, like a poisonous serpent just sitting there waiting for an opportunity to strike. And it did when they got a chance to sell him. And that also talked about hatred, being one of the works of the flesh. opposite of the fruit of the Spirit, which would be brotherly love and kindness. And then we talked about deceit, all these things coming from the heart of a man, deceit, we talked about here in Mark 7. And certainly that was there. And peer pressure. All the brothers getting together, you can imagine as they start talking about what they're going to do and things like that. Just worse getting in a group like that. So, going on then to thinking about him down in Egypt now. So he's there, he's servant of Potiphar, who's the captain of the guard, and the Lord blesses Joseph. He's with him in all he does, very successful, and that success is noted by Potiphar. Potiphar pulls him out and puts him in charge of all of his house. As he tells, Joseph tells his wife, Potiphar's wife later, the only thing he's concerned about is what? The food that goes in his mouth. Everything else I'll take care of. And it's pointed out here, he's a very handsome man. We don't know how old he is by now. We'll look at him some age later on in the lesson tonight. Don't know how old he is exactly here, but 17 when he went, and he's only just there, we don't know. But young man, and Potiphar's wife is interested in him for adulterous purposes here. So Joseph refuses to do anything with her and said, how can I disrespect wickedness and sin against God? We talked about the fact he's a long way from home. Nobody's there with him. Nobody would know. It would matter to him. But Joseph knows that God would know. So he refuses this advances by this woman. But she keeps it up every day, just wanting more and more of him. And you can see how the refusal would finally begin to start getting to her. With Joseph in the house doing his work, which we'll see in a minute, and she grabs his garment, try to get to him, he steps out of it, and runs out. So she's had enough, so she calls the man in, and later tells her husband that he tried to attack her, and has the coat there to prove it. So Potiphar then believes that, as Joseph put in prison, again, the Lord blesses him, the Lord's with him in all that he does, and he's placed in charge of the prison. So he rises to the top again. That's where we leave him for that lesson there. That's the end of chapter 39, with him there in prison. And we looked at, again, a couple of lessons off of that. One about responsibility, doing this work. The passage here in 1 Thessalonians, learn to work with your hands. We talked about the lust and the seduction that went on there. The passage here from Proverbs, the young man, that don't know what it's going to cost him in the end, but it's going to cost him his soul if he yields to that. Lying. I guess I'm thinking about it. If you look at all the sins we've seen all the way through the book of Genesis, which one seems to pop up the most often? And to me, it's this one. It's lying. You just think about the people we've had involved where deceit and lying has been involved. If you go through the book of Genesis, lots and lots of it. And then Joseph, when we talked about this then, was faithful in these most difficult and trying circumstances. And the Lord's with him, and what he did, he prospered. Now, talking about this line and deceit here a minute. We've got, this quarter has an extra class in it. We have 23 classes. A lot of times, most times it's 22, sometimes 21, based on how the weeks all fall. We've got a lesson at the end, lesson 23, review. I can be thinking about doing two things for that class. Go through the 50 chapters and just write down one little short clip about what these chapters are about. So think about the chapter content if you go through this story. Go back through it and just make you a little list, 1 through 50, and one little short thing about what's in each chapter. And then go through it and think about some of the lessons, some of the things we found as we went through the book, some lessons we got from it. Just start making a list of those things. Sometime over the next couple of weeks we'll get to that last lesson. We got 21 and 22, and then we'll get 23 over there. We'll talk about some of those things. Okay. Getting in now to chapter 40. Alright, Joseph's in prison. He's in charge of the prison. And two unusual prisoners get put in his custody here. It's the chief baker and the chief butler. And that by chief baker and butler, they were Pharaoh's top servants in those areas, the chief butlers, and when it would put the cup in his hand with the wine or the juice, whatever it was in it. The baker's the one that was in charge of all the baking for Pharaoh. But he got mad at him and he threw him into prison. So Joseph in charge. So he's got to come in and take care of him. He goes into them one day, and they're down and out looking, and they both had a dream, both of them, the same night. And they tried to find somebody to interpret the dream. They knew it had some meaning to it, and they want to know what it was. So we're going to see this kind of phrase here used all through the lesson time. We're going to talk about it at the very end. Whose interpretations belong to? Who's in control? Who's getting the credit for this? Joseph tells them out up front. Interpretations belong to God, to the Lord. Joseph can't do it on his own. He never takes credit for it. Keep that in mind as we watch it go through here. Interpretations belong to the Lord. So, here's the dream. The butler had the dream of a vine. And it grows up, has three branches. And it buds and it blossoms and clusters of grape come up there. And the butler goes up to it and he squeezes juice out of them in the Pharaoh's cup and takes the cup and gives it back to Pharaoh. So, he wants to know what's the interpretation of this. Joseph tells him. In 3 days, the three branches, 3 days, you will be restored to your place and you will again be serving Pharaoh with his cup as you were before. But he says, when you do that, please remember me. I'm here in this dungeon. I got put here unjustly. Remember me to Pharaoh and get me out of this place, what he's asking. Well, if you're the chief butler sitting there, what do you want to know? What's my all about? That came out pretty good, right? Well, he has three baskets full of baked goods on his head. In the top basket, all kind of goodies for the Pharaoh. And the birds are coming along and they're pecking the baked goods that are in the top basket up there. And he says, in 3 days, three baskets, you'll be brought out of the dungeon, you'll be beheaded, and your body impaled on a tree. The birds will come and eat your flesh just like they're pecking the baked goods in the basket. Both interpretations were true. 3 days later, it's Pharaoh's birthday. And he sends for the butler and the baker. The butler, he restores his place, begins serving Pharaoh his cup bearer to the king, and the baker's hand, just as he had told it would come about. But one little thing the butler forgot. He forgot Joseph. Okay. He has a mind about like mine sometimes. He didn't write it down. He forgot to tell him about it. So he doesn't tell the Pharaoh about Joseph, and Joseph's still in prison in this dungeon for this time. 2 years pass. 2 years pass in the time of these interpretation of these dreams, and now Pharaoh has a dream. Or dreams that he has seen the same night. Wakes up and goes back to sleep and dreams again. His dreams were this. There were 7 big, nice, fat cows that came up out of the Nile River. And good-looking cows. Then 7 of the ugliest cows he had ever seen. He said there'd never been cows that he'd ever seen in Egypt anywhere as ugly as these cows were. They came up, and what'd they do? They ate the 7 fat ones, right? And what did it look like then? This is as bad as they did start with, okay? And that, keep that in mind. That's the meaning to that, I think, there. So, 7 fat cows, good cows, were eaten by these ugly cows, and ugly cows were just as bad as they were to start with. And his second dream was, similar type, a stalk of grain comes up, with 7 heads on the grain, 7 heads of grain on this stalk, nice, big, pretty stalk, heads of grain, and then 7 thin, ugly grain, head to the grain come up. They consume the 7 good ones. What do they look like now? Just better to start with. Made no effect. Okay. So, that's his 2 dreams. So, he calls in all the Egyptian wise men, the magicians, anybody that might be able to interpret his dreams. Because they couldn't really interpret them. They were guessing, I guess, but they couldn't do it. So he, the old chief butler, not just slip a paper, he wrote this note on about Joseph. So he comes, he comes in and says, oh, here's what happened to us. And he tells this story of what Joseph had done for the chief baker and himself. So Pharaoh then sends for Joseph. Get him out of the dungeon and bring him here and see what he can do for me. So Joseph then cleans up, changes his clothes. Think about going from a prisoner in the dungeon or the prison here he's been for some period of time, I don't know how long, at least 2 years. Could be some time longer than that, right? And now where are you going? To appear before the great Pharaoh, in control of all of Egypt. Quite a contrast there that Joseph got there. And Joseph gets there, and Pharaoh tells him what he wants. Notice what Joseph says. God will give the interpretation. God will give Pharaoh an answer. It's like he told the butler and the baker there. I'm not doing it. It's not me. God will give him the answer there. So Pharaoh relates his dreams to Joseph. And he says, no one can help me interpretation. You had all these magicians, all these wise men come in, and they couldn't tell him what it meant. Joseph tells Pharaoh, says, God is telling you what he's about to do. And you saw the dreams twice because what? What did he say? It is sure. What's going to happen is going that God is about to bring it out. So you reinforce it with a second dream. And it's the same thing the first one did. God is going to do this. And the dreams are the same. 7 years of plenty. Big, nice, fat cows, big heads of grain, 7 years of plenty. We'll talk about that just in a minute about that. And then there's been 7 years of famine. 7 years of severe famine. Now, here's where I think the point comes in about the seven fat cows, and they're still ugly. What's it going to be like at the end of the 7 years of famine? The 7 years of plenty would be totally forgotten. They're gone. Because the 7 years of famine are going to be so severe, it's going to take up everything that was in the good years to be gone, and there'll be the land's depleted, the passage says that. So eating those seven ugly cows, eating the seven fat cows, you didn't have a many. But when they got finished, when it was all over with, it's still depleted. It's still gone. The results of the famine are so severe. So I think that's what the meaning of they didn't look any better after they ate the seven fat cows or the seven grain, or heads of grain that way. I got thoughts about that, something different from that or whatever. Okay. What do we do about this? Well, Joseph has a plan. I'm sure. In my mind, revealed to him by God. That's what he ought to do. So he says, you need to choose a wise man. And he didn't go in and say, I'm the one you ought to have for this. He says, choose a wise man and let him be over all the land and collect a fifth of the produce each year. Now think about this a minute. You got 7 years, you're going to get a fifth each year of what you got. If you got 7 good years and get just a fifth of it, and you got 7 bad years, then use those fifths in over here, make up for it. Are you going to use 4/5 of it for 7 years? I only have a fifth each year left over here. I mean, somehow the math doesn't seem to work out. So what's got to happen? How good were those good years? They were great years, okay? The Tennessee normally was, they were fat cows. They were big heads of grain. They were good, great years, so that a fifth of it would be enough to sustain them through those 7 lean years over there. Okay? There's abundance. So much abundance that what does Joseph do? He couldn't even count it. He quit keeping records. That's so much. Into every city, with all the land around that city, brought all the grain into each city, stored it up, to have this for the 7 years. Storage reserve. And this plan that Joseph had, he's Pharaoh. So now he's ready to pick out the man to do it. Who's he pick? Joseph. What did he say? Can we find any man in all of Egypt as wise as this man, he chooses Joseph. Not just to look over the grain. What does he do to him? To the top again, just like he done, they done in Potiphar's house, like he done in the prison. But Potiphar over there said, he didn't worry about anything except the food he ate. Joseph now in Pharaoh's house is up to the point of, what did he tell him? Nobody in Egypt does what? Nobody lifts a hand to do anything without Joseph having to. Thank you, Doug. I meant to bring it out. Pharaoh recognized. Pharaoh recognized that what Joseph was telling, the interpretation of the dreams, the wisdom of this plan ahead here, that there's something behind it. And Pharaoh himself says, the wisdom of God is in it. We're just bringing that out. I meant to do that. So, he places robes on him, rings on his fingers, a gold chain around his neck, puts him in a chariot, the number two chariot, and everyone bows the knee to him, just like they would bow the knee to Pharaoh. That's the position Joseph has got here. He has a wife, Aseneth, the daughter of one of the priests of one of the gods, the Egyptian gods there. And we notice now Joseph is 30 years old. But over 2 years of that was spent, from the time he interpreted the dreams of Butler and Baker to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. The other part, we don't know how much was in Potiphar's house before he was put into prison, how much in the prison, but those years have 13 years have passed since the brothers sold him out. He went from 13 years. Now he's 30 years old. He has a wife. He's the number two man in all of Egypt. A lot of contrast from that pit they put him in there and sold him to the Israelites. Now, we'll talk about providence just a minute, a little bit. What is God's plan? What is God doing with this thing? What's the promise he's made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob about this nation? They're going to be as many people as you can't count, right? Where did they become this great nation? In Egypt, okay? Over that 400-year period. We see all that by looking at what we know happened out there. The other ones see that. We don't know well what's going on here. But this is all in the plan that God's got to get Joseph in Egypt, to preserve the people, you understand it, to get them into Egypt, so they become this great nation, he leads them back out then as his people, to go back in and take the land. This is all laying out. We're going to talk about that more just a little bit. So, Joseph goes to work gathering up food during the 7 years of plenty. Again, I said earlier, so much you can't even count it. And he has two sons born, Manasseh and Ephraim. What's different about saying it like that? How we normally say it? Ephraim and Manasseh, okay? Esau and Jacob, how we normally say it? Jacob and Esau, because the birthright was all switched. Well, we're going to do that later on too. These two get switched around. And that's the oldest, we don't think about that. And that's just the older one, Ephraim's the younger. You get that switched around like the others did at some point. So, the famine now comes, the land is totally famished, very severe. Joseph sells the grain to them, everybody comes to buy it. Even the countries around Egypt have no food. Famine there also. So that reaches out to get into what territory? Canaan, where Joseph's family is, okay? So, Jacob tells his sons to go down to Egypt and buy some grain. Don't sit here looking at each other while we starve to death. That's what he tells them. Go buy some grain. So, 10 of them go. All right? And then we got all together. Well, right? Where's one? He's already in Egypt. What's happened to the other one? That ain't out of his sight, okay? What's already happened to one son of his favorite wife, Rachel? He's gone. So what's he doing to Benjamin now? Bob said he's taking care of him. He won't let him out of his sight, essentially. So Benjamin stays home with Jacob. The brothers go down to Egypt. They come before Joseph. That's the end of thy grain. What's the first thing they do? Who is Joseph? Number two in all of Egypt. What are you going to do when you see Joseph? You're going to bow down to him, right? Uh-huh. You know that was coming? Sure we did. Okay. From the dreams back there. Now, they didn't recognize Joseph. Think about when you see somebody, what the setting has to do with it. You see somebody out of place, you don't recognize that person quite because they're not in the right place. They respect Joseph to be in this kind of position? Of course not. I mean, it's totally, and with those kind of clothes on this earth, they didn't know him, but he knew them. Okay. And so he accused them of being spies. Knows they're not, he accuses them of it. Sounds like really rough with them, you kind of read what it says there. They said, no, we're not spies. We're 12 brothers from Canaan. And one is in Canaan, and one is, what the different translation says, but you're international. I've been listening to it, says, one is no more. You don't exist as far as we know. You just think out of the picture with you and Joseph. So he puts them to test. Okay, you've got to prove to me you're not spies. You have a younger brother down here. First he talks about, all of them in prison and one going back gets a brother. And that flips around here in a minute and we'll get to it there, but that's what he tells them start with. Puts them all in prison for 3 days. So think about this thing a little bit. So these ones, instead of all staying and one going, one can stay, that's how you can go. Go bring that younger brother back. To prove to me that you're not spies. Begin thinking about what they've done. Reuben reminds them how they treated Joseph. And it's all they say is coming back to us. They don't know it's Joseph. It's all coming back to us because of what we did. How we treated him. I'll get that verse we'll talk about it in a minute. Please. Now, do you mind Joseph understanding all they're saying about this? He understands the language they're speaking. Now, he's speaking Egyptian through an interpreter. So, in the front of them, he bound Simeon. Takes him and puts him in the prison, and let's let him go back and bring that younger brother here to prove to me you're not spies. Go to the grain, take it back to your starving family, is the word to use. But he puts their money bags back in the mouth of their sack. So going back now, on the way back, one of them stops, opens the sack, gets him going out to feed his animal. What did you find there? That money bag. How would you feel with that? What are they going to accuse me of next? Stealing the money or something? So they refuse to be spies. So they go back and get back to Canaan. They all their money talk their sacks up, and what's in all the sacks? Their money. Okay? So now they're really perplexed with what's going on. They start telling Jacob about all this stuff that's going on. We've got to take the brother back. We've got to take Benjamin back. Jacob says, look, Joseph's gone. Now Simeon's in prison in Egypt, and you want to take my youngest son back, not going to happen. Not going to happen. And that's where the chapter 42 ends with that. Let's pick that back up then. This is where the story goes next time. Okay. Somebody else has time to talk. What we leave out? Some part that we need to talk about. Or a narrative or whatever. Just a you think of what Doug's saying, and some of the fact that Joseph gives all this credit to God, and Pharaoh picks up on it. He tells about God being in control, and Doug does a such great job about that. I'll have to talk about it some more. Okay? Thanks, Doug. Good lead in here. All right. It's about giving credit to God. Think about what Joseph did several times through here. When he's talking to the butler and baker, what did he say? Who gets the credit for interpretation? God does. He goes before Pharaoh. And he says, it's not me that's going to give Pharaoh the answer. It's who? It's God is. Okay? And who's going to show Pharaoh what he's about to do? God is. So all along here, he's giving God the credit for all this stuff he knows and stuff he's able to do. I'm not doing it. God is. And that's the point Doug's making, like, making an impression on Pharaoh. He recognized who he was and what he's doing. Well, he's giving God the glory for all this. We talked already about Steve's lesson a couple of weeks ago about God Almighty. That's who he is we're dealing with here. That's who is in control of all this. It's God is. And Joseph's giving him the credit for all this that's going on here. Over in Acts 17, when Paul is in Athens, he's talking to him about this unknown God that they don't know. Think about what he tells them about God. God who made the world and all things in it. He's Lord of heaven and earth. Does it well in temples made with hands. He doesn't need anything from man. He's not served by any man's hands. He's not need anything. So he's the one that gives life and breath to all things. That's God. That's the God that we serve. God should get the credit. Think about who he is. Just read those two verses there and think about who this God is. He doesn't need us. He doesn't need credit from us. He's Lord of heaven and earth. He made it all. So not only should he have the credit or the glory for everything, but that leads right into this next point here, and that is, who's in control of everything? God is. Joseph says, the thing is established by God and will shortly come to pass. God's going to do this. He's in control. I thought of a purpose there. He had placed Joseph in this position with all this stuff for a purpose. Going back to fulfilling his promises. He made Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God has his plan. He sees it. Word providence. Truth. Before, I don't know if you pronounce this video or not. It's a video to us, because we think about video being something we see. What's those words that the word providence comes from? To see when? To see before. To see the end before the beginning. God knew what was going to happen. He knew about the 400 years. He knew about the suffering they'd go through. He knew he'd bring them out. He knew he'd give them the land. He promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God saw all that. He knew all that. He was beyond it. What's the ultimate? What you really getting at down here? Who's he going to send? He's going to send Christ over here. That's the other promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, right? All that's planned. All that's planned. But God is in control. He knows beforehand what's going to happen. Look at the verses here from Isaiah. Remember the former things from Remember the former things from forever. I am God. There's no other God, even none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning. From the past, if things were not done, saying, my purpose shall stand, and I will do all my purpose. God's in control. He knows what's going to happen. He's in control with Joseph. He's in control now. Okay. The third thing I've got to talk about, and it's this little thing here about the brothers. Chapter 42, 20, verse 21. They're talking. They don't know Joseph understand them. They're talking about what they've done. They said, we are truly guilty because our brother. And think about this next part here. We saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us, and we will not hear this distress because this distress come on. Can you imagine? Can you imagine when they were putting Joseph in that cistern? The look on his face. Perhaps he's crying. He's 17-year-old. They're older than he is. They're doing this to him. What are you going to do to our father? Now, I just the thing comes to my mind of what he might be saying to him. And they pull him out of the cistern and do what? sent him off, at least as a slave, probably bound, we don't know, going to Egypt. Will he ever see his family again? Not as far as he knows. So let's think about that anguish that was on this dumb man's face, a younger brother. They were doing all this thing. They're guilty of that. They feel guilty about it. Probably justly so. This verse from Numbers, you hear the last sentence of this verse quoted quite often. Where it says, be sure your sins will find you out. They will. Think about this. Achan. Remember the story of Achan? They're going to, later on, going to take the land. First city they go to is Jericho, march around it one time for 6 days, and seven times on the seventh day, blow the trumpet, shout, walls fall down. What did God tell them about the spoils? That's all mine. It's the first city, it's the first fruits of the land, all the spoil belongs to me. Achan took some of it, we know that. They go up the little city of Ai, send a small army up there, 36 of them are killed. This is getting to chapter 8, I guess, of Joshua now. 36 of them are killed. They go up there on a seventh to that, and then go back then and take it in chapter 8. But before they do, Joshua prays. He falls down before God. He knows something's wrong. And then they start casting lots, or whatever they did, to find out who's guilty. There's all the tribes before them. Somebody has sinned. First thing, they narrow it down to the tribe of Judah. Now, if you and all these other tribes, how you gonna feel now? It's nice relief, okay? But you tribe of Judah, they're still there. And they come down this next, the clan. All the others can go. From the clan down to the family. And then down to this Achan and his, now, here's the point. How do you think Achan felt? All that time, if every group that gets left, who's in that group? I am. Why? Who knows what I did? God knows what I did. Okay. First in Jeremiah. My eyes are all their ways. They are not hidden from me. Their sins not concealed from my eyes. Not only theirs, but ours. Just like Joseph was faithful and nobody's around, that's our job. God knows what we're doing. God knows. Different chapter in Jeremiah. The heart is deceitful above all things, desperately wicked, who can know it? I, the Lord, search the heart, test the mind, even to give every man according to his ways before the fruit of his business. God knows what we're doing. Be sure your sins will find you out. That's a challenge for me every day. Every day. All right, I left y'all about a minute and a half. Sorry. I got some thoughts about these chapters. Yes, please. Yeah, I don't know. I thought about that too. I meant to do some digging. I really just didn't get into it. I'm sorry. I don't know. Well, Reuben, he's the second and oldest, right? And Reuben had been the one to try to save him up front. I don't know. Yeah. No, I don't remember. But Simeon and Levi are the ones who did and went and killed the people of, they had all circumcised and all so well. They went and did that for revenge for their sister. I don't remember why it was Simeon. Sorry. Okay. 43. I don't know how far it goes. Look at the pages there and leave them. Leave these things for us. And remember, we've been working on that lesson 23 a little bit. We'll work on that some. Thanks.